It's like, you don't want to be getting on a 747 and you see somebody's like fixing shit with zip ties. That'd be me.
No, I think that's perfectly valid. Like, just get a strong enough zip tie and you're good to go, right? Like, it's like
aircraft grade zip
exactly,
tie.
Exactly. It's all about the tolerances, man. Like,
well, and I've also learned through hard-won experience that all zip ties are not made alike. You need those quality zip ties. You need name brand zip ties.
Who is the name brand zip tie, if you don't mind me asking?
Anytime I see 3M in the hardware store, I know that's probably a really good sign.
Yeah.
So I'll grab that. I found for Crazy Glue, nobody knows adhesives like JB Weld. They've got a JB Weld Crazy Glue that's like, it's everything you want out of a contact adhesive, sir. When I go into like homeowner dad mode, I want to go full Hank Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the greatest moment in King of the Hill was when Hank can't pop the cap off his WD-40 can. So he pulls out a smaller WD-40 can, sprays it, pops it off, then sprays like the squeaky door hinge. That's me. That's what I want to just embrace.
That's epic. I wish I could get to that point. I don't know if I'm too lazy or what. Like, I have all the good intentions. Like, I have all the work stuff. I have all the bags of mulch. I have everything. I have a bag of mulch sitting outside my window for 7 months now. So
just wait till full circle, till spring.
Honestly, at this point, why put it down?
That's how I am with yard work. Like, it just kept getting worse and worse. And Phil, finally, my wife and I both accepted, look, we hate doing yard work. And now we pay people to do it. And it's expensive. But every time I'm fucking relieved that I didn't have
to
do
it. It's worth it. Yeah. My yard's small enough that it's not something that I spend, I'll spend maybe an hour on it, hour and a half. And I'm like, that's good. I can listen to my podcast. I knew I'd get the right verb there. Listen to my podcast while I'm doing it. And yeah.
It's not that my yard's big. It's that the previous owner was a green thumb and they spent, you know, easily 10 grand at least, if not more, on landscaping,
mm-hmm.
like per section of yard. And especially the backyard is just incredible. And they set it up so different plants flower, all like everything in the yard flowers sequentially. So it's like in spring, this thing flowers, then the next, there's mm-hmm. always something flowering. I don't know what the fuck any of it is, how to take care of any of it. And I've had like friends and family who know this stuff come over and try to explain it to me. It helped, but it still will always get to a point where it becomes a hopeless Jurassic Park looking nightmare. I just spent, it was like $600 to have my man, Jose, and he spent 2 days fixing the nightmare I had created with like 2 years of just total negligence. I knew it was bad when like one of the neighbors made a comment. I was like, ooh.
When you get the neighbors making the comment, that's the, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. And I also realized I stopped going in the backyard because I was ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't want to go back.
See, at least you had at some point someone put care and love into it and have it. It was nice at some point, right?
Yes.
Mine is, no, not at all. Like, there's just garbage back there. Like, I don't know where the garbage came. I'm sure there's a dead raccoon like hiding under the leaves somewhere. No.
That's the circle of life.
I did have a raccoon stake his claim to my backyard and watch. So he just walks in, giant effing raccoon. Huge.
Yeah, they're huge.
And this guy, and I'm like, I'm tapping on the window. I was like, go away. And he looks at me dead in the eye, squats down and starts taking a shit. Just staring at me the entire time. He's like, I'm like, okay, he's asserting his dominance.
Oh yeah. Raccoons are smart and they are aggressive. Mm-hmm. I dated a girl whose mom rescued raccoons. So I got to go, they had a dog run and the dog run was used to house rescue raccoons. And you'd go in there, they'd like they would then search your entire person. So like, and they did it systematically. So like, they'd literally check your shoes, your pockets, your mouth, and the one for your mouth would do it by climbing up the dog run onto the top of the dog run, then drop down, and then like reach inside your face. And they're like, oh, it's that's, cute. Just let him. I'm like, I don't horrifying. Want raccoon claws in my mouth.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
I mean, they're and like they talk, they chitter mm-hmm. at you. They're very excited. But it's like, also, it's a fucking wild raccoon. I don't like, fine, yeah. you need to look at my mouth. I guess this is happening.
I mean, what are you going to do? Say no?
It's yeah, claw thank off you, your Dr. Face, raccoon. Right?
Exactly, exactly.
Like, I don't think these people are entirely sane. Yeah, it was like 15 years ago. I still remember that vividly.
Man, you would not forget a raccoon like just kind of going in and clawing open your face to look inside. Yeah.
And once he was satisfied that I was not hiding food he could take literally out of my mouth, then he moved on.
I would like to see someone like have an acorn or something in their mouth. So when they pop it out, they're just like, whoop.
But what is funny is like they use their paws like hands. So they'll like mm-hmm. they grab, like they could easily work things. And manipulate things, and then they take all the food, and they had like a kiddie pool, and that was primarily for the raccoons to wash their food in. So they'd mm-hmm. all once they had figured out who gets what, and then they all like be staring at you and like doing this as they're washing their food. Like, just fascinating and a little scary.
Yeah, no, thank you.
But anyway, no, I would not. If I saw a raccoon had moved in, I'd be like, all right,
just
stay away from that area. Keep an eye, make sure he doesn't destroy the house. Mm-hmm. And as long as he stays outside,
we're all good.
We're just going to respect each other's space.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, let's talk about what we're going to talk about. We could just talk about raccoons for the entire time. I don't mind at all. I think that'd be riveting to be honest. So a couple of things that you had mentioned, talking about design doesn't matter the way you think. Copyright and content creation are the most overlooked opportunities. I think those are two solid things to talk about. Anything, you just zoomed in incredibly.
But I'm now, using camera setting. Oh, God.
There.
No, this did not work at all.
We got a rackish angle now. But after Black Friday, is there another thing you want to talk about? Is there something you're excited about?
Who's your audience?
Mainly digital marketers.
Okay.
We are moving into the e-commerce space. So I think
okay.
and moving into, we have a bunch of people in the e-commerce space already. And I think that's going to increase over time, but most of them are people selling info product or physical products online. So very much within your alley, I think.
Okay. So yeah, if you want something top, when does this go live?
This will probably go live beginning of year.
Okay. So we could do two hot topics that are timely is number one, hey, here's how people did on Black Friday. And here's what we saw mm-hmm. in terms of Black Friday performance. If you're looking to like compare yourself, we just did our podcast on that last Tuesday or this week. It came out on Tuesday and I recorded that last Friday. So that's fresh in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the other issue that is, you know, hot topic, lots of digital marketers facing right now is the ever increasing cost of return on ad spend. And I think I mentioned
that. I would love that one, to be honest, because that's something we're focusing on right now.
Okay. So I think between the two of those, like, yeah, we come up with other stuff, but two of the two of those will easily fill the time.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds good. All right. So I will ring a bell. I'm going to intro you. And then I guess we just start talking. Sound good?
Sounds good to me.
All right.
I think we've both done a few of these.
Yeah, just a tad. All right. I'm going to ring this thing and get us in. Hello and welcome back to Data Beats Opinion. I am Keith from Segmetrics and my guest today is Kurt Elster from Hello. EtherCycle. Hello. Good to bring you in here.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Yeah.
Why am I here?
I have no idea at this point. We've known each other a while now. And I think, so you host the unofficial Shopify podcast, which I think is the number one Shopify podcast.
Yeah, according to me, it is.
Okay, that's all we need. That's all we
need.
It's
got over a million downloads and is frequently top 50 in the entrepreneurship category on iTunes.
So it's a great podcast. Pretty good. That is solid numbers and a really good podcast. So
thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So we've known each other a while. You focus mainly, of course, named on the podcast, on e-commerce people, specifically with Shopify. You've had some really cool clients over the years. I know you're the big one that always sticks out to me is Jay Leno's garage, which is awesome. Hell yeah. And I get to see a lot of pictures of that on Twitter, which is always fun. So I want to say thanks for joining us and taking us through some of the e-commerce and just strategy stuff, especially now that we're winding down from Black Friday, which was, I think, 3 weeks ago. I don't even remember anymore. It feels like months, years.
Yes. I did, I got smart this year. I knew, listen, everybody's busy. All my clients, all the merchants are busy mm-hmm. during Black Friday doing customer support, fulfilling orders, et cetera. So the day before Thanksgiving, we left for 8 days to Disney World. And I didn't bring my laptop. I just went, and it was fantastic to not, though it was kind of cool though for Black Friday. You know, I don't want to miss out entirely on this experience. Mm-hmm. I went to Disney Springs. I don't know if you're familiar with
this. No, I don't know Disney Springs.
Disney owns a giant, amazing, beautiful outdoor mall. So it's like, you know, Disney does it up everything. They plus it, as they say. Right. If you want the best mall experience possible, Disney Springs is it.
It's the Disney version of a shopping mall. So yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And it was packed. It was unreal, the number of people. The single craziest thing I saw was, you know, those spin to win pop-ups that plagued websites for the last 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
And they're finally starting to die. They're starting to lose their effectiveness. I saw a billboard. I wish I'd taken a picture of this goddamn thing. Or I did take a picture of it. I wish I'd taken a picture of the whole setup. Billboard outside the store.
Mm-hmm.
It is literally, they clearly took the spin to win pop-up that you see that slides out mm-hmm. and made a sign that was, it's like spin to win, but it was the same colors, the same layout. It was clearly, the inspiration was the pop-up. Mm-hmm. So this is like art imitating life. It was crazy. And then I look in the store, and sure enough, they've got a giant, they got a giant spinner in the dead center of the store.
It's a physical one. Yeah.
Yeah. And people are spinning it, and they won. It was like X% off your purchase, X% off your next purchase, free gift. I mean, it was cool. And there was a line of people to do it. So I thought that was interesting that it went from, like, things have gone full circle where
now because it started out
mortar stores.
Right. I mean, that was a physical thing. You go to the store and they'd have a raffle or something, and then they decide, oh, let's take it online. And now it's back into the store since it's not effective online anymore.
Yeah. That's the craziest thing.
Do you remember the Punch the Monkey ads? Way back.
Yeah.
Where it was like, punch the monkey.
And then, yeah, shock the monkey.
Shock the monkey, all those things. I'm waiting for those to come back.
We brought this up on our own podcast, and then it like went down quite the rabbit hole researching it. The thing that killed those ads was the death of Flash.
Yeah, 100%.
Once that happened, it was over. We didn't have those fun, absurd ads anymore.
Yeah. Well, and now even a lot of the ad platforms will not even allow the HTML or the SVG version of those, because you can reproduce those, but none of the ad platforms will really allow us to put on animated ads anymore. Which is kind of simple ones, yeah, but not the fully interactive ones, which is sad. Like, I think those would be fun again.
Oh, absolutely. I wish the internet were more fun. Given the tools we have now, sometimes I just want things to be novel and fun and ridiculous.
And that's one thing that I think, especially if we're talking about ads, that people don't really get a sense of, is that the novelty is what sells the ad. They're like, oh, this super pink ad, or this ad that's drawn with crayon is converting. People must love ads that are drawn with crayon. It's like, no, it's that it stands out, right? You're doing something different that is enticing to the user. And that's why you're getting that good return on ad spend and that good click-through rate.
I think you've touched on something more important and less reported on than it should be. I've been doing this 10 years. This is the first year the importance and impact of novelty really finally sunk in. And a few things that did it. Our most successful, so we do Facebook ads, mm-hmm. Facebook, Instagram ads. So we realized our most successful of those ads were for the clients that provided the most content and most consistently. So for a lot of clients, it's like, you know, it's like pulling teeth, and then, you know, we get a little bit, and then we have to make the ads ourselves. And really what we ended up doing, and here's a decent hack, is we would split the audience up and have a couple ad sets, and then you just round robin it. Mm-hmm. So that way people see different ads. But the ones who really excelled were the people who every week, every 2 weeks, once a month, they would drop, hey, here's new fresh media content ads and promos for you. Mm-hmm. And then we would put that into effect. That keeps it fresh. That keeps it novel. That keeps it working. And so that was an interesting takeaway in general. The brands that did a lot, and I've just jumped into things I learned in 2019.
Right.
The brands that have done a lot of new product launches, mm-hmm. those did the best. We had one brand that did 97%. So here's some Black Friday stats. They had a 97% revenue increase. This is a seven-figure brand. 97% revenue increase.
During Black Friday? Or?
Yeah, for, well, we did I think the November 4th to December 4th is the mm-hmm. date range I pulled yeah. the data for. 97% better revenue. So doubled on seven figures in sales with only increasing traffic 17%. And this brand has this, the brands that engage with their customers, that treat their customers as a community, mm-hmm. tend, those are brands that did that perform the best. But the ones that could do that and combine that with like a lot of media creation and combine that with new products, mm-hmm. well, that's where it worked really well. And those two things are novelty, right? So right. it's like new product launches are novelty. I had someone on Twitter go, when are we finally going to stop just using new as subject lines? I said, never. The human
because
brain
it works,
craves novelty.
Right.
Yeah. So those new product launches, phenomenal. New creative is more important than we realize. Mm-hmm. I'm just doing a monologue.
But I think it's true. I think that
I think where it's going with that. Go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead. Go ahead. Where are you going with it?
I was going to say the takeaway there. My point is number one, novelty is never going away. So if right. you're looking for like, what's the conversion lever? What's the revenue lever? What's the thing I could do? I think it's, you always have to go back to human behavior and human psychology. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, can you, instead of treating people like a customer or a brand, take that to the next level and build a community out of it.
Right.
And can you, and we all love novelty and we are affected by scarcity, which creates urgency. Mm-hmm. So in terms of Black Friday, we don't always want to have to be discounting. I mean, that's like traditionally what right. we do on Black Friday. But our brands that perform the best, a few were just like, all right, here's site-wide discounts, and they did well. But the ones that really excelled did, hey, here's a limited edition product. Mm-hmm. So either they did product launches in addition to their sales on Black Friday, or it was free gift with purchase, but the gift was an exclusive. So I'll give you an example right. from Hoonigan. I think they did this so well. Hoonigan.com. It's this automotive lifestyle brand, skews younger, and they have the cars that they create in their garage are part of the talent. They are mm-hmm. as important as the YouTube hosts, the talent themselves. And so they created I think it was 8 or 10. They did 8 days of Christmas, and each day, if you placed an order on the site, you got that day's free lapel pin, and the lapel pin was one of those cars. Oh, but it was cool. an exclusive. Mm-hmm. You had to make an order to get that pin, and they didn't tell you what. They said, hey, they teased it out where you just saw the silhouette, where they're like, there's going to be a pin each day, and it's going to be exclusive for that
so
day.
So you got to check every single day.
So and then you also keep coming back.
And you have to make that decision of, hey, am I going to get the pin for today, or am I going to get the pin for tomorrow?
Out.
Right. Maybe yep. there's a better one. Man, that's smart.
So that's like, that's really, and that's, they knew what cars were important to the community because they listen and they've built that community, and they're leveraging that novelty, but also creating urgency because there's that exclusivity where this mm-hmm. is, there's a 24-hour period in which you can get this pin. That's like that. I think is a perfect example of here's how you check all the boxes and really have successful promos. Now that they did this for Black Friday, but I mean, there's no right. reason you couldn't do this at any time.
Right. Exactly. I think it was Josh Pickford was just saying today that he was seeing the end of year sales, the Christmas sales for his product. And he's like, how can I do this every month? Right. And so, well, This is one of the ways you can do that, is to create that that uniqueness and that limited time scarcity. The problem, of course, is once you do scarcity all the time, it stops being scarce. And this is something, yes, I see with especially kind of info product things, where they're like, oh, this is an offer that's only available now, and then next week it's only available now, and the week after only available now. And right, you have diminishing returns without, what you were saying, that authenticity, right?
And that's so important.
Exactly. The authenticity of the offer, as well as building that community and having people trust you, is what is the majority of that trust and that benefit that you get.
The other side to this is Facebook ads are getting more and more expensive.
Oh my God,
every digital marketer knows this.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you have a theory onto why they keep getting more expensive? Because I do. I want to run it past you.
My theory is that it's just become a much more competitive market. I think that there's just more money going into it. I mean, I remember when Facebook ads were like 10 cents. Like, they were super, super affordable. And now
we didn't take them seriously.
No one took them seriously. And they converted great, right? Because no one was taking them seriously. But now, because everyone's piling on, there's so much competition for it, the pricing just goes through the roof, I assume, because there's so many people jumping in there.
Yeah. Well, more than ever, we've lowered the barrier to entry. And we have more people seeking entrepreneurship. And tools like Shopify, and these other platforms have really democratized being able to build a digital brand. So yeah, you've got more people entering the marketplace, but even more important, the big brands are now jumping into and taking Facebook ads very seriously. So like Walmart, Procter & Gamble, BMW, those people are now dumping money into ads. And for them, their customer lifetime value is wildly beyond anything us mere mortals can conceive of, right? And so, like, if I'm BMW and I'm going to spend money on digital and I'm going to spend money on Facebook ads, I might be trying to hit, I want to target that kid at 13. Mm-hmm. I want to get him that brand affiliation to BMW now, because then when he's 30,
he's going to buy a BMW. Exactly.
And then maybe he buys another one and another one. So the lifetime value for them is insane. They don't think of, big brands do not think of customer acquisition costs the same way we are in terms of a digital funnel. And so those people are now dumping money into Facebook ads. At the same time, you know, we have like a year and a half ago, Facebook did that PR push where Zuckerberg came out. He's like, we want to connect you to your friends and family and the things you care about. Mm. So we're going to show you less ads and more your friends and family. What? No, he limited the inventory. It's a supply and demand problem.
Right.
This supply just went way down as the demand's going up. So suddenly, oh, wow, of course they're going to get more and more expensive.
Yeah.
That's not going away.
No, I mean, it's not.
It's just going to keep getting worse.
And this is, it's interesting because I see the same thing, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but with email providers as well. And they're always saying, like, we have the best deliverability. Well, of course you do, because you're brand new and all the spammers aren't on your platform yet. But as they get older, as things go on, that quality goes down because there's more spammers around. It's the same with the ads. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, I was getting great returns on Bing ads, of all things.
Right.
Who the hell uses Bing? Right. So,
but that's why it worked.
My target audience were people who would be using Bing, and I was able to get like 50 cent leads. Like, that converted. Like, that's amazing, right? You could never do that on Google right now. I think their average is like $3, $4 cost per click. Like, it's getting up there. It's getting up there. Now people are looking at Twitter and Reddit and other ad platforms that we can go to, because the main ones are so
necessity.
Expensive. Yeah. I mean, there's so many tools like AdEspresso and even Canva and stuff that automatically builds and pushes ads up to these platforms, right? And at that point, it's become so automated that it's really difficult, I think, to get a good return on ad spend for anything that is not a good $1,000 product, well, maybe $100 product. But it's rough. It's rough. Not that it can't be done, but I think it has gotten a lot rougher. And you have to be a lot smarter to stand out from all the crap that's out there.
I've got some stats for you.
I would love some stats.
Okay. So we've got I asked our marketing manager, I said, give me a general narrative. I want an overview of BFCM Cyber Weekend. And then I want to know your takeaways. I want to know what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
And so Thanksgiving was much later this year. So sales started earlier.
Oh, and yeah.
I think early on there was this fear of, well, will that work? And quickly we found, yes, the early sales worked. And then the fear was, well, are we going to cannibalize the Thanksgiving and the actual Black Friday, Cyber Monday sales? Are we just kind of shifting the money around?
Mm-hmm.
And like, really, that's the dark truth of Black Friday is you've just taken, you get soft sales in October and early November and you make them up at a discount.
Right.
During Black Friday. So it's like the fear was, oh no, did we just make that worse? And the answer was no. If you started your sale before Thanksgiving, you probably saw pretty strong numbers. And those were just like bonus days because acquisition costs then were lower, resulting mm-hmm. in higher ROAS. But Black Friday and Cyber Monday themselves, still strong in terms of generating revenue, but acquisition costs were way higher for many, not all advertisers compared to last year, to 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And we did see, what was that? We saw ad accounts drop performance significantly over the weekend. So Saturday, Sunday was slow. So mm-hmm. we did a lot of just like lowering ad spend and then just shifting that ad spend to Cyber Monday. Cyber Monday itself, that's a work day. Sales start slow. People were anxious. But then we got into the evening. Sales take off with the peak showing up at like 9 p.m. So
oh, wow.
I assume, you know, it's after dinner. The kids are in bed.
Right.
And that's when things really took off.
That last kind of holiday shopping sprint when everything's kind of calmed down, everything's done, and just kind of now we're starting the purchasing.
Yeah, absolutely. So those big ROAS numbers, not as easy to come by this year as they were last year. And I think it'll get worse next year. But to give you some ranges, so our accounts that spent 100 grand or more that weekend landed in the, on average, 2.5x ROAS.
Wow.
And accounts spending less than 100K, they did better because it's more targeted.
Mm-hmm.
We're in, on average, about 4x ROAS. 3 to 5x was the range, so average 4.
Now, how does that compare to like your general sales numbers for similar brands? Is that a doubling of ROAS? Is that about the same? Is that less?
That ROAS is trending down from what they would normally do.
Got it.
Say if like, you know, you ran the July super sale kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And then of the offers, you know, obviously like the big discounts generated a lot of sales. We found the typical offer was 30%, 30 mm-hmm. to 35 were like, that seemed to be the magic number where it got people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't want to be the guy who was like, get 5% off. You know,
right,
everybody's
right.
deleting that email. But you don't want to have to offer more than you need to. So it seemed like 30 was where you got people's attention. Even 25 wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
But the others, like, you know, as we said earlier, the offers were that weren't discount related that did well. New product launched on Black Friday. That used to be like heresy. You couldn't launch a product during a sale week. Now everyone who did that did well with it.
Interesting.
Or like the variation on that would be limited run products, you know, like the lapel pin idea that Hoonigan did. Also, we saw a lot of people do like bundles, BOGO sales, or SpendX, get a free gift, mm-hmm. free or like free product. Those did as well, if not better, than just like the sites that were like, yeah, X off site wide.
I think at this point, you know, we're talking about uniqueness and standing out. At this point, I think X percent off is just such a standard offer that you have to have something that's maybe a little more complicated, but a little more standout-ish, right? That gets beyond the, oh, it's 30% off. Because in my mind, and I could be wrong, but the 30% off, the percentage off, that really hits someone who is already on the fence about something, but isn't an initial like, oh, this is really interesting. Where a new product launch, the lapel pins, that's something that can get you excited into a product that you weren't necessarily excited about in the first place.
Yes. And I think there's probably like, you know, depending on what your product mix is, you could do both strategies.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think you're right, where it's like, if it's 30% off, it was a thing on my wish list, right?
Right.
And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to pull the trigger, buy this now. Versus if I'm like, well, I'd like that brand and I'm on their list and I made a past purchase, but I wasn't necessarily thinking about making a new purchase, having, you know, that novelty or the exclusivity of something new, well, that could be a good time to do it, to launch it. And buyer intent's very high anyway. So I think that's, we're seeing people are trying to get away from discount strategies.
I think, the discount strategies, I think they're good. They're simple. They're straightforward. But I think at the end of the day, they don't create, they're not great for the brand, to be honest. I mean, because then people are just waiting for the next get discount. They know it's going to come. For example, I wanted a monitor. I found one that was at a discount. It didn't work out. I had to return it. And I'm not going to go for another one until they're on sale again for football season. So
you're such a baller for getting that $6,000 Mac Pro Super Display. It was, I'm so jealous.
I got two of them, in fact, and I just kind of like wrapped them around myself. No, I'm a cheap bastard. I got a TCL. So my monitor is a 55-inch TV that I've repurposed as monitor. It is super nice. It is super nice. But I got the upgraded version of it, and it just didn't work out. So next time they're on sale, I'm going to get another one.
And you've got TCL as the brand?
The one I had bought this time was a TCL. I got a Spectre or a Scepter. I can never. Yeah, Scepter.
Ooh, I had one of those. It was grim. But I have the TCL Roku TV in my house, and I think it's great.
It was a great TV. It was a great monitor. The issue was it wasn't curved, and they do not make curved ones. And when you're sitting, I think I'm 16 inches back from my monitor.
I like the curve.
You
got a curved monitor.
Yeah,
you have. It's only curve. I think it's a 30 inch. But I got the curved Dell, and I thought it was a gimmick until I've been using it. No, I'm really into it.
It is night and day. I tried it with the flat one. I hooked it all up and everything. And the sides, it's like you really get that perspective sitting this close where you're like, the words are like this thin on it. And it's like, oh, it's miserable. It's miserable. So next, what is it? Super Bowl sales, the next TV sale. And I will be getting it then. But going back to it, it's like they have nothing. There was nothing there that inspired me to get it other than the fact that it was cheap. Right. And I had no brand connection to them. I wasn't excited about it for any reason. Whereas a lot of the other stuff I did buy, I'm excited because there is a new product. There is a new offering. There's something cool that's happening with that, more so than just a 30% off, which they'll eventually get my money at some point. But
did you make any Black Friday or Cyber Week purchases that surprised you? You bought a thing that you didn't expect to buy.
A couple, yes. Mainly for the kids, but it was interesting because I was in a buying mode. And that's I was in this buying mode, and whenever I saw something that was interesting, I had to force myself not to buy it rather than to like actually consider, because I'm getting all the Christmas gifts, right? And so I see something that's either insanely cheap or I see something that is interesting enough that I think that the family will like it, the kids will like it, and I make that purchase. But it was all about that uniqueness and things standing out much more than the actual price for the majority of things.
So again, it's back to, you did make a value purchase, but it really didn't do anything emotionally for you.
Correct.
The stuff that was unexpected, that was novel, that's where you surprised yourself and pulled the trigger on it.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And it's interesting because what I thought was coming out that was new. So I had bought some board games and stuff because they had a big promotion around them. And I had seen these for the first time. I was like, oh, these look great. These are new games that I'm going to be excited. And then I check them on Board Game Geek and they're like 6 years old. But they had been positioned to me as something that was new and exciting, which was really interesting because I just never heard of them before. It's the whole thing, like if you haven't read it, it's still news. Right?
Yes.
And the fact that I thought that these things were brand new, I was like, oh, I'm at the top of things. And everyone's like, no, we've been playing that for years. I'm like, oh, okay.
So a way to do that, let's think about that. How would you implement that for clients, for products? Two ways to do it. One is just as straightforward as like a back in stock strategy, where like, hey, check out these trending now, these bestsellers back in stock, these favorites return, our most demanded item. I have one client who just runs who intentionally let stuff go out of stock just so they could bring it back in stock and announce it. And it's always like limited run in that fashion. That could work, create some scarcity, add some fun to it. Another strategy that I thought was really clever, this comes from Mark Aruda at Constantly Varied Gear. They sell leggings with pockets for women, but they have really cool prints. They have some other apparel, but it's like gym apparel for women.
Right.
And they do a runoff strategy. So they'll take two of their like all-time favorite previous bestsellers, and they said, look, we're going to bring them both back in stock, and you could buy, you've got 24 hours to buy either one, and whichever one has fewer sales, that one never comes back in stock again. We discontinue it forever. And the one that wins, that will bring that back in stock, and you can reorder that, and like that'll be around for a few months. Never seen anyone else do it.
And that's a continuing strategy. That's a continuing strategy that they do. They're like, this is just the way we do business.
Yeah, they do it. They do that. They do, and they do just a lot of like, hey, here's the new designs. Here's the new thing.
Right. That's awesome.
Yeah, they're clever.
That is amazingly cool.
So it's got this like, it really creates, it helps build that community. It helps create that urgency. Because it's like, listen, if you pick the wrong, if the one you want to buy is the one that didn't sell out, you just missed your chance.
Right.
But you don't know. So it's kind of, it's a lot of fun.
So there's I'm wondering how much that increases the average order value from people buying two, right? Like one of each, right? Because that same thing of like, oh, this is the one I want, but I don't want to miss out on this, right? And I'm wondering if that increases number of products purchased or not. That'd be interesting to see.
Well, you know, what'd be cool is to do like to have like a progress bar, so like a landing page where it shows, like this is how many, like which ones, or even it just said like current, which one's the current winner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't tell them by how much, but it's like this one's winning, this one's not, and see if that changes the dynamic of which one's purchased or if both of them are purchased or how that.
I think probably be nice to have a pro. No, I want a progress bar that shows like a slider. Oh,
like a fighting.
Yeah. Because if it's like, I think if it's like right in the middle and you see if it's like the one that you like is like 49%, you may be like, well, shit, I'm going to buy that. Show them. These people have no taste.
I wonder, I think there's some research done into that with polling and especially like Twitter polls and stuff like that, where seeing the results ahead of time influences the decision that you make much more than I think. It primes the pump, exactly. Much more than people think, because some people by their nature are contrarian and some people are more, they want to go with the flow. Personally, I'm more contrarian and I'll generally go to one of the lower ranked ones just because I want to support underdogs, right? So I would love to see the result on sales on something like that, where if they had essentially the fighting progress bar.
I'm going to pitch it to him because I think that's such a great idea.
I think that's solid. And then also understanding like, okay, do people buy two? Cause that would really interest me if making people decide between the two actually increased the people who can't decide and want both. Yeah. Interesting.
I'll text him, and if he replies, we'll see. Run off sales.
I'm going to put a quick cut in there.
Okay.
All right.
All right, I just texted him. We'll see if he replies. I was texting him this morning, so we'll see. Maybe he will. We'll get lucky.
That'd be cool. So then one of the things, you know, going back to the kind of ad spend and the different kind of strategies that people are using on those Black Friday sales, did you have a breakdown of how much of that comes in through email, people already on the list, how much of that is coming through new people and new ads? Like, how did you see a difference in those types of sales strategies? Understanding, of course, that ads influence email and email influences ads.
Good question. So for a majority of people, return customer rate remained unchanged from whatever the site usually does. Like either it would be like up 4% or down, it was like plus or minus 10%
right.
seemed to be the typical range.
Interesting.
So it's hard to say. The only, and there was just one outlier where they brought in, it seemed like they picked up an 32% more new customers than they usually would. But for the most part, it was like whatever your normal breakdown is, it's probably going to be about that.
Right, right. Okay. So the
as far as channels, it was, well, the people who used SMS, SMS did really well if you used SMS, because I don't think a lot of brands are using it yet. And the people who are on it are like hyper engaged.
That is mind blowing to me. That, I mean, as someone who hates SMS, especially SMS like sales messages and stuff, I just cannot believe that people convert from that. It's mind blowing to me. And well, I know they do.
Which one are you more likely to ignore? Your email or your text?
I'm definitely going to ignore my email more than I understand it's like right in my phone, but I can't imagine ever signing up for that.
Right.
Like, and if I did, being very, like if I just got an SMS from a brand, being very upset that I got this SMS from a brand, right? Like,
and that's what that's the pushback against SMS. That's what everybody says. And yet every single client I have that runs, and I'm with you, I don't like no brands. I'm not opted into anything. Every brand that uses SMS sees a 99% open rate and like an equivalent of a 20x ROAS.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And then,
I mean, it's very successful.
And I'm kind of curious with the brands that are using SMS, is it mainly like lifestyle brands and like kind of that boutique style brand, or is it more general stuff? Like are the customers like just the rabid the people using SMS, the rabid fans who are like, okay, anything that's put out by this company I want to have, or is it something that's more generic?
Part of the success of SMS is you get, I suspect only the most engaged people are the ones who are going to sign up for SMS. They're the people who are like, if this brand is saying something, I don't want to miss out on it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do a lot of product releases or a lot of like novelty, that's the kind of thing that people are will sign up for and get engaged with on SMS.
Yeah, definitely. And then I got
a reply to my text. They refer to it as their face-off, where two product releases are pit against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it drastically increases that people buy both. Whereas normally if you're like, hey, here are two products, go.
Right, right. That's interesting. That's interesting. It's what I figured that people would, I mean, it's that fear of missing out, right? And it goes back to that whole idea of marketing as psychology, right? You have to understand how people are thinking and the human behind some of these decisions, right? And that's what's really going to change the makeup there. So there's one thing I was going to mention. You were talking about the SMSs. Oh, it was just that I was going to mention, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of marketers forget, and I know I forget, is that we're not necessarily our best customers, right? Like you and I would never sign up an SMS message, but they convert.
I think, that's such a common mistake that people make is like when, especially, you know, you're a merchant or you're the brand owner. When you're initially building the brand, it's easy to see it as like, well, I'm my own best customer.
Right.
But by the time you've made 100 orders, it's over. Like you're no longer, the experience, the outcome, what people get out of it, it no longer belongs to you.
Right.
So you need to always be talking to your customers. And I think that's one of the most overlooked strategies that people miss out on is, especially like around conversion rate optimization, is always be surveying your customers, figuring out, you know, where you can improve, but also like, how do they see themselves? How do they see the brand, and what do they get out of the brand, and who do they view this brand as being for?
Right.
And then put all that back into your copy And that's really, you know, our most successful conversion rate optimization campaigns have all been born out of customer surveys.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I think a lot of companies don't like to do that mostly. And I don't know why. I wonder if it's partly because we don't like talking to people. We like our little offices and we like working on the computer. But I agree that every time we've talked to our customers, it has been an eye-opening experience, because once you get a, like you said, once you get a number of customers, you're no longer the main user of your software or your product or your best customer. You're not your target audience anymore, because the audience has kind of taken over from that. And one of the experiences we had was that we started getting a lot of people looking, a lot of sales companies and sales processes using Segmetrics, which we did not design it for. It's for, we thought about it for info products. We didn't even think about e-commerce, but now we have a ton of e-commerce and we have a lot of people using it for sales processes, which it works. It's great. We have features for that, but just 100% did not imagine that going forward. And so our pricing isn't matched to that. And we need to review that and stuff and see how that works. But it's just interesting that that is, that we were able to find a niche and a customer need that we didn't go out to find, right? They just kind of found us organically. And now we've managed to latch onto that and build that up as a sales channel and as a product benefit as well.
Yeah. And this works for basically all businesses that get income from the general public.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be talking to them, because like your message, you don't necessarily know that your message is why you're successful. I mean, it could be something entirely else. So if you can always, and positioning is so important. So if you can always be iterating on that based on feedback, those are the businesses that really see consistent growth.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Awesome. Well, Kurt, anything else that you want to, I mean, this has been amazing, like talking through this. This is, I think a lot of people, they just don't get the insights in, you know, we're kind of siloed, right? We understand what we're doing. We understand what our friends are doing, but we don't have a view of what goes on in these types of sales and what's going on with the ecosystem in general, because that's the benefit that consultants like you provide, which is you get to see a lot of people and you get to see the trends over all these different brands and all these different agencies and all these different stores and how it's acting. I think that's super valuable for people to like have that baseline and to get that understanding of how companies, other companies in their niche are performing.
I think the one key takeaway I want to leave people with. So we talked about, like, a lot of this was about how to differentiate yourself and so that you stand out, so you get that sale to try and work against these ever diminishing return on ad spends.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the biggest missed opportunity is tell your story. So as we've got big brands like Walmart, Target, BMW, Procter & Gamble are eating up this ad spend. They can't tell a brand story the way an individual can. They can't connect with people. They have to hire a spokesman, mm-hmm. right? Whereas if you're a small business, if you could get out in front of it and you could be the face of it and you can, you know, talk to people in a one-to-many fashion as a human, well, people buy for people, not brands.
Right.
So I think it's this huge advantage that small businesses have over big businesses that they utterly ignore or actively work against. When it's like, we here at Acme Corp, you know, when it's like three guys in a garage, mm-hmm. own that. People yeah. will relate to that. That's how you find your tribe. And that will make your life much easier when you embrace your own story and get in front of it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that KFC still uses the Colonel, 80 years after he's passed away, right? Like, people engage with people and people love that story of, and that's why I think we see a number of these products and stuff that are very life cycle founded, I guess. They're founded on personalities and a specific type of lifestyle that they are showing and they want people to emulate, and they stand as an example of, hey, if this is the type of lifestyle you want to live, if this is the type of person you are, this is the brand for you, right? And this is our personal story. And then connecting it with a human person that's not just a paid mascot, like getting Kevin Hart or someone to pimp your soft drink, right? It's more about authenticity, right? And we were talking about authenticity and uniqueness.
That's a key word, authenticity.
Yeah, it really is, because people trust people. And when we look back at the brands that we love and that I purchase from, they're all very small boutique and have strong stories behind them.
100%.
Awesome. Well, Kurt, thank you so much for joining us. And besides EtherCycle and the unofficial Shopify podcast, where can people find you?
Oh my gosh, Google me, head to KurtElster.com, sign up for my newsletter. That comes from my real email address. If you reply to one of those emails with a thoughtful question, I will happily send you a thoughtful answer.
All right. Well, I will, I'll be spamming that inbox then.
Please do.
And I'm loving your Disney shirt.
Oh yeah. This is from my Disneyland trip, not to be confused with my Disney World trip.
Got it.
You want to talk about community and branding. These are a line of things they do called the Spirit Jersey. It's just a long sleeve t-shirt with like huge branding across the back. And now they do them as like, there's exclusives for the extra ticketed events. So if you went to the Halloween party, you then had the opportunity to purchase a Halloween party specific $65 Spirit jersey. So the goal is to get these people to buy not one, but like several Spirit jerseys.
Right.
And having explained to you that concept in a derisive fashion, here I am wearing one. So it worked.
And I mean, I know we technically already did our sign off, but I mean, it's, yeah, I think Disney is one of the masters of this. And, you know, I was in Japan for 15 years and Japanese brands have that down pat. They understand the collectiveness. They understand that limited edition, like they have limited edition Kit Kats that you can only buy in certain cities or certain times of the year. Like it's this idea of, okay, people will, and you look in America on American Twitter and people are like, oh my God, do you see these Kit Kats I found? It's like, it works. No one ever got excited about a Kit Kat in Kmart, right? Like it's this specialness, it's this uniqueness, it's this branding, it's this, I have something special that you could only get in 1997 from this one place, right? And that is now special to me. And I'm willing to pay for it because it has that uniqueness and it has that value.
Absolutely. Especially since we could buy anything online.
Exactly.
It makes those exclusives so much more important and special.
Yeah. When you can get anything anytime, it's the things that you can't get that are special. And
that you should patent that slogan right now. When you can get anything anytime, it's the things you can't get that are special.
Yep. Yep. There's actually, going back to Japan, they're very season-based with foods and stuff. And there are certain foods that you can only get certain times in restaurants. And not like the McRib. Right, but there's like entire brand,
the McRib,
like,
which is based on pork price. Its availability.
special time offer because pork has become cheap.
That is what it is.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. All right, Kurt. Thank you again. Good talking with you as always.
My pleasure. Talk soon.
See you.